You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we've got a show for you. It has to do with happiness and sadness. It's all about something we call the adversity principle. Tap, T-A-P for the adversity principle, tap into your potential by embracing adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how are we going to get started on this one?
Sounds interesting.
So there was a nice survey done of 140 nations, countries around the world, and looking at their happiness level, looking at a few different social constructs, such as social support, income, health, freedom, generosity, absence of corruption, all things that they associated as being things that attributed or things that were attributed to people's happiness.
Mm-hmm.
In looking at that, doing that survey of 140 countries, thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world, they came up with the top 10 countries. You want to know what they are?
Yes, I like to know.
This will be interesting. Let's see what those top 10 are. The top 10 countries, the top 10 happiest countries in the world are Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Israel, Netherlands, Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland, and Australia. Now, when we look this up, I have a little issue with this. I think somebody who took down this information, who wrote for the magazine, mistook Australia for Austria, because all those other countries are very similar to Austria. Australia, they're a little down.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little down. They're not as happy, right? They're down under Australia? I don't know.
Have to see.
We don't know.
We don't know.
So it's number 10 is either Australia or Austria. If you look it up yourself, I think you might find it. It's Austria. Because when I tried looking for it afterwards.
How about we focus on the nine?
Focus on the top nine. The top nine.
Okay.
So the top nine. Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, mm-hmm. Israel, Netherlands, Norway, Luxembourg, Switzerland. Other than Israel, all those others are like Scandinavian countries, right? They're up in the north in the cold. They've got those really dark winters where it's just so cold and you don't see the sun. And then they have those wonderful long springs where there's the sun out almost 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them do. Switzerland doesn't have that, but when you talk about Sweden, Finland, Denmark, they have those long summer days.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. What else is similar about those countries? So the top countries were dominated by Nordic countries that had stability, and the stability of it is over the years, these countries always are ranking in the top countries. They're small countries. They're not big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 5 to 10 million people, I think. None of them are too outrageously large. Nordic countries like Finland, Denmark, Iceland, Sweden, Norway are consistently dominating the top rankings year after year after year. Finland secured the top spot for the 7th consecutive year. And the key factors are strong social support, high income, excellent health care, and minimal corruption. Now, what's interesting, we have been to Finland a number of times. I think I might have been there 7 times now, every other year for many years. Typically during the summer, typically during these long days of beautiful weather, not too hot,
mm-hmm.
24-hour sun almost. It gets dusk and then the sun comes up again.
Yeah.
Beautiful times. But I've also been in Finland in February.
Yeah.
And it is dark at 9:30 in the morning. It's bright enough to go out and run in the street, covered with snow. And then in the afternoon, it's dark really early. So it just seems dark and dusk all the time. And then the nights are long. But the people are the happiest. That's kind of odd. All this various weather extremes. Why would that be? Well, we'll talk about that and why. What else do we have here? Some of the more things about the surprises and trends in the rankings. Israel ranked fifth in 2024, despite recent conflicts, attributed to a three-year averaging methodology. So they've looked over the past three years to average the scores in order to get the 2024 score. But even with all the trouble going on in Israel now, still ranked, I think, what was that, number five. And new entrants in the top 20 included Costa Rica, Lithuania, indicating a broadening of the geographical happiness spectrum. So it's more than just the Nordic countries, and it is expanding a little bit into some other areas. And this is out of 140 countries. So the top 20, you know, the top couple are like really high. And then as you get down into the top 20 and the top 30, it can be a mix that's kind of moving back and forth.
Yeah.
So I think what begs the question at some point is, okay, if those are the top 10, what are the bottom 10? We're going to get to those in a minute, but let's look at some more differences for the top 10. They've got generational and demographic insights into this group. Lithuania leads in happiness for individuals under 30. So four countries with individuals under 30, it was number one. Denmark was the number one country for those over 60 years old. There is a generational divide. Older populations are generally happier than younger ones in several European countries. That's interesting. I wonder, we should get back to it, but I think we're going to forget to get back to it, so I'm going to talk about that in a moment here. Concerning trends, U.S. millennials experience double the loneliness compared to older generations. So millennials are lonial. Millennials are lonelier.
What country is that?
I don't know. It's a new country. It's near Lithuania.
It's so apart.
Eastern Lithuania. In any case, the generational divide. Why are older populations possibly happier in several European countries? So this is my take on it. And we're going to get into this in the second part of our show, that they have experienced war. They've experienced, you know, they experienced a number of wars. They have parents that were directly involved in war, like even World War II. They come from hearing about these wars, and there were other wars going on in those time frames. So they've seen conflict, they've seen stress, they've seen the world at odds. So maybe they recognize these times, no matter how difficult they may be. Maybe they see these times as, you know, this is actually pretty good. Whereas if you don't know any better, you go, oh, the world's blowing up, you know?
Could be.
Or they've seen worse corruption and now it's not so bad. Don't know. Let's continue on with this. Challenges for the U.S. and concerns. The U.S. dropped from 15th to 23rd place, its worst performance since 2012. Loneliness and declining happiness among children and adolescents are pressing issues, particularly in North America and Western Europe. So it seems the more successful, the more wealth, the more freedoms the people have, the lonelier and the less happy they are. Why is that? These are generalities. We're not saying everyone's this way, but we're seeing certain trends. Persistent struggles for low-ranking countries. So for the low-ranking countries, Afghanistan remains the unhappiest. It's also followed by Lebanon, Lesotho, Sierra Leone, and Congo. These countries grapple with instability, poverty, and systematic challenges, highlighting stark global disparities. So in some of these countries that are facing ongoing terrible times, They're not seeing the good times against the bad times. They're just seeing ongoing bad times. And it's leading to unhappiness.
Yeah. That's just no hope.
How about, what are the top 10?
Bottom?
Unhappy. The bottom 10, happy. Or the top 10, unhappy.
Okay.
Either way you want to look at it. Here they are. Afghanistan, Lebanon, Lesotho, Sierra Leone, we talked about Congo, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Malawi, Eswatini, and Zambia all had low scores. In fact, what's interesting is Afghanistan is half the score of the number 10, Zambia. So Afghanistan is really low, very low score. And ongoing conflict, terrible times over the last 20, 30 years, international struggles within, you know, within
and
itself.
By religion and stuff.
Everything's terrible. So political instability and conflict, let's look at that. So this is one of the things that they said led to unhappiness. Afghanistan, Lebanon, and Congo are marked by ongoing conflicts, political turmoil, or fragile governance. Persistent violence and lack of political stability erode social cohesion and citizens' trust. So what we're trying to do is learn from the countries the things that are creating happiness and unhappiness. And sometimes it's clear, like the instability and the corruption. But then you get a country where things are pretty good, but people aren't happy. And you go, why?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where our show's going today. We're going to discuss all that. Economic challenges in some of these lower happy countries.
Mm-hmm.
High levels of poverty, unemployment are prevalent in countries like Lesotho, Zimbabwe, and Malawi. Limited access to resources and opportunities perpetuates economic stagnation. So not having an economy that's moving, there's not a lot of jobs, not a lot of money exchanged, so there's not a lot of economic lift.
Hmm.
People aren't being lifted up by the economies. So that leaves, these in reality, this is why people are sad. Poor life expectancy, inadequate access to quality health care will also affect overall well-being. Diseases, malnutrition are common issues in Sierra Leone, Zambia, and Malawi. So it's health care, it's governing, it's corruption, it's economy, all these things play into it. Lack of social support, so society helping people.
Yeah.
Weak infrastructure for education, healthcare, and public services. Insufficient safety nets leave populations vulnerable to crises, especially in Eswatini, and Lesotho. It's interesting that, you know, I'm reading on these countries, and I'm like, I don't really know these countries, and mm-hmm. apologize, but I think we got to start researching where these countries are and what might be.
May we visit this country?
Visit. We could do that. Corruption, we talked about corruption again. High levels of corruption reduce the trust in public institutions, hinder development. Transparency and accountability are major concerns in Zimbabwe, Congo, and Afghanistan, leading to the population's unhappiness. And then finally, climate. So you would think, oh, it's a nice warm climate, the weather's beautiful. But along with some of that in some of these areas also comes other things, such as many of these nations face environmental challenges such as droughts, floods, resource depletion. These challenges exacerbate poverty and food insecurity as seen in Botswana and Malawi. So no food, climate's bad, droughts, crops aren't growing. So you may say, oh, the weather's nice. Well, the weather's not nice. It's okay, it's warm. You don't have the cold like they do in say, Finland and Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you don't have the cold, and that's a relief from the heat.
I know. So I know people from living in the coast, you know, mm-hmm. the sunny and the beach, sometimes it's not happy too.
Now we're going to talk about that. We're going to mm-hmm. talk about different ways that people rate happiness, like hedonistic view of happiness.
Is how you see it. Yeah. What do you believe is happy?
Yeah, so we're going to look at a couple of different ways people think of things as being happy and see if those actually make sense. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about happiness and what are the different things that are inputs into happiness, why people aren't happy in areas of the world where you would think they should be, and why people are happy in areas of the world where
you would think they shouldn't be when we come back.
In moments of gratitude, we notice the beauty in every detail, the smiles, the shining eyes, the teamwork, perseverance, and effort. These are the building blocks of the incredible mission Ayudaven supports. We've witnessed girls who joined the home as babies grow into confident professionals, certified in their passions and contributing to society in meaningful ways. Three inspiring stories from Ayudaven. Angela, who came to Muchos Manos at 3 months of age. She will graduate as a food and beverage manager with plans to open her own bakery. Maria, who joined Muchos Manos at the age of 9. Today she's in her second year of dentistry. And Mercedes, who came to the home at the age of 12. Now a dentist graduate, she works at one of Valencia, Venezuela's top dental centers. Make a donation today via Zelle at gym@ayudaven.org and celebrate the rhythm of hope, purpose, and unity that connects us all together.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Welcome back. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Why we were doing pouty face there is because of our next section. It's called Sadness, the Key to Happiness. That when you experience sadness, you then can understand happiness. There are many people who don't have the opportunity, and I call it opportunity, that these are two sides of human emotion. They're very important for humans to have a sadness. It's like when a loved one is sick, or someone in your family or someone that you know very well dies, that you get sad, and you get sad, it's contrast to the happy times. So it's like we talked about adversity at the beginning of the show. Adversity, sadness, these things actually are a contrast that give a background and a contrast to things that we can feel happy about. Does that make some sense? So let's look into the intro into happiness and sadness. They're central emotional experiences for human life. We need to have them. They are... Part of that is behavior, relationships, and fulfillment. So the impact of happiness and being sad will impact our behavior, they'll impact our relationships, and our fulfillment in life. There's psychological, physiological, and socio-cultural components to happiness and sadness. Sadness aids in our growth in our ability to have empathy and awareness, not only awareness, but self-awareness. Mm-hmm. That if you can recognize if you're sad and when you're happy, and really be sad and happy, and not just be ambivalent or what is that, where you have no feeling,
or hiding the feeling. So I remember that I recognized in some moment that I be sad, and also I can say I celebrate the sadness. You know, so it's just that you agree to have the feeling and you feeling this emotion, because it's like the happy you have celebration, you can also I cannot say enjoy, but I can say feeling the emotion. Okay. Don't deny
the emotion. I agree with that. How about slide 2 of happiness introduction? It is often regarded as the ultimate goal of life. I want to be happy, reflecting well-being and satisfaction. Sadness is a natural response to challenges and losses. It's integral to growth and resilience. Both emotions are shaped by, as we talked about, biological, psychological, and societal influences. There's also situational and subjective factors involved. The key goals of our presentation today are to explore influences and societal impacts on happiness, as well as offer pathways to emotional well-being. And it might be also helping others achieve emotional well-being. Maybe it's just for us to kind of question why we're happy, why we're not happy.
I guess the way that people cannot recognize how feeling, that is one.
because they're not self-observant, or they don't, actually maybe they don't know what the feeling is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that too. That this is interesting when you just actually don't know what sadness is.
Yeah. And then the you can figure out being this side or the other side, and you know value when you are happy too.
Because you don't recognize, and that's one of the definitions we're going to talk about now. Is if you're happy all the time, meaning you may have a state, and one of the definitions that there's for happiness is the removal of pain. When you have pain removed, it's a relief. Relief is a happiness. Oh, I'm relieved of this pain. I'm now happy. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the definitions we'll talk about in a second here. Let's see if it's coming up right now. Let's see. What is happiness? A state of well-being, contentment, or joy. There are two primary types that we're going to talk about. Hedonistic or hedonic happiness, which is focused on pure pleasure, comfort, and the absence of pain. Everything's wonderful. And then number two, eudaimonic happiness, which is rooted in meaning, purpose, and personal growth. So one is sensation of just your chemistry, feeling wonderful things, dopamine release and chemicals. And the other is feeling accomplished, that you've been able to overcome a challenge, that you've been able to take on a task and get it done. And these two are competing things for happiness. We'll get into talking to each. I don't want to talk about it and then talk about it, but let's do that in a minute. So look at the other psychological theories on happiness. There was positive psychology, which is Seligman, the PERMA model, which was positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning, accomplishment, were all different aspects or dimensions of happiness. And then Maslow's hierarchy, which many of us are well aware of, happiness arises from fulfilling basic needs at first, like food, clothing, shelter, and then going to higher things like self-actualization and also being social with other people. Example, a person may find hedonic happiness in a vacation and eudaimonic happiness in volunteering for a meaningful cause. So those were examples of what's the difference between hedonic and eudaimonic happiness. One is enjoying the vacation, and the other one is helping somebody and feeling fulfilled and happy because you helped somebody.
So yeah, but I hear also people enjoy to prepare the vacation because your mind is always thinking when you be there, and you enjoy all plan, the do, the this, but in the moment that you are in vacation, you sometimes don't enjoy
it. You're at the
your
goal.
Mind yeah. is almost, the vacation is done. Best to point it the first day, you know, because your mind is always in the future, not in the present.
So you could look at it as happiness is the journey, not the goal. Like, if once you get to happiness, you no longer have it. Once you've achieved it, it's gone. It just slips through your fingers. But as you're working towards it, this is where the eudaimonic happiness comes into play, is that as you're working towards and accomplishing goals, you're feeling happy because you're accomplishing things. Now you get to be on that vacation, you're sitting on the beach, and maybe you're enjoying the beach a little bit, but maybe it's not as fulfilling as you thought it would be, and maybe it's not as fulfilling as achieving all those goals that got you there.
But also because your mind is in the future and the present.
Yes. Because you're not actually thinking about now. So you're in the future on the beach, but you're now thinking the future and you're not enjoying what's happening right now. Wow. So how did you assess happiness, or how did they, through certain different ways, when you are doing studies on people and you're looking at why are they happy? Here's different ways of measuring. First, it's a subjective measurement. It makes it difficult to actually measure it universally. It's different for different cultures, different people, different societies, different geographic areas. It's always different. So here's some methods. Self-report surveys. There's a tool like Oxford Happiness Questionnaire, which will provide insights into subjective happiness levels. Behavioral indicators, smiling, laughing, social interaction frequency. There's physiological measures, which is actually the chemicals that are going around in your body, like hormones such as serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin signal happiness. And then finally, some of the components are calmness, joy, excitement, These are things that if you have some calmness about you, which is the opposite of nervousness, joy, opposite of being depressed or unhappy, and then excitement, you anticipate something. Those are all signals of happiness, different ways of measuring. Maintaining psychological well-being strategies. Oh, so how do we maintain being happy? Here's some clues. Here's some hints. Here's some tips. Strategies. Mindfulness practices. Meditation reduces stress, fosters focus. It actually allows you to observe yourself as well. Positive relationships. Strong social ties enhance life satisfaction. Goal setting. Align activities with personal values and long-term aspirations. You'll feel happy achieving your goals. Gratitude exercises, daily acknowledgement of positiveness increases contentment. Practice gratitude through journaling. It will improve your emotional resilience. So those are some ways to, witness, to take part in happiness. Is to really think about it. Think about the things that would make you happy. Have proof. What is sadness? It's a natural emotional response to loss, disappointment, or unmet expectations. The characteristics are feelings of helplessness, reduced energy, and withdrawal. Evolutionary function, it encourages introspection and problem solving because you want to get out of being sad. It also signals the need for social support. Others see you sad and may want to interact. It builds resilience by processing grief and failure. Example, bereavement often leads to personal growth after the grieving process. Maybe you've made connections with other people.
Yeah.
That makes sense? I think it does. How about assessing sadness? There are other tools for assessing sadness like there were for happiness, such as self-report scales, like the Beck Depression Inventory Measure, sadness, severity. Behavioral signs, if someone's crying, they're avoiding people, they're reducing their engagement with others. Physiological markers, such as elevated cortisol levels, and can indicate prolonged stress. And then some of the components that are you can feel is stress, reaction to overwhelming demands or threats, anxiety, fear of uncertain outcomes, and nervousness, short-term unease or discomfort. So those are all signs of sadness, physical signs, chemical signs, and outward behavioral signs. What else do we have here? What is the impact of sadness on well-being? Good, bad?
Bad.
For the short term, it's bad, right? So higher risks of depression and anxiety disorders, impaired cognitive functions, including memory and decision-making. So it's hard to make good decisions when you're sad. Strained personal and professional relationships because you will be more disconnected. Chronic sadness due to job dissatisfaction can lead to burnout. Does that make sense? I think so.
Yeah, so many chemicals in your body.
Yeah, and when you are, say, depressed and sad at work and you're not getting along with people, your performance at work drops. You are more disconnected with people you work with. And we just heard that you make poorer decisions. You can't think as clearly. So your job performance suffers and it becomes cyclical.
Yeah.
So job performance, then it's you're sad, then you don't get along with others, and it just goes round and round. So we got to break that. Determinants of happiness and sadness. Part of it is programming, such as genetics. Up to 50% of happiness is heritable. It's influenced by neurotransmitters. Family and upbringing can impact it. Secure attachment in childhood fosters stability. So that means you feel attached securely to your parents. Adverse childhood experiences will increase vulnerability to sadness. So that's one of them. I have three slides of number 9.
Mm-hmm.
Another set, the objective mindset, proactive choices. So the choices you make, exercises, hobbies, social interaction can promote well-being. Focus on the journey. We were just talking about that. emphasize growth over outcomes. It can foster fulfillment. And when you achieve something, you get that natural happiness of achievement.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad. What are some of the things that may impact happiness in a society where people have everything that they need? In maybe a very strong economic society, in a society where people can have what they want, they get good paying jobs, they have health care, they actually have safe streets. Why would people be more unhappy in that situation? Or could be?
Because maybe it's in the same stage. Always.
They're always in the same state.
Don't have any.
And then we get uncomfortable with the state we're in because mm-hmm. they don't have a contrast.
Yeah.
So what might lead to not knowing that you should be happy? Not having the other state.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about childhood. How about that? How about growing up in a bubble? When you are brought up being overprotected, if a child is shielded from challenges, it may limit their coping skills and they may get unhappy more quickly. Example, when somebody gets a participation trophy, it will undermine their resilience to failure in the future. Protected society, easy access to resources reduces appreciation for effort. I really don't have to do anything. I can just order something and it's delivered to me.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of major crisis shifts focus to minor inconveniences. Example, children who are accustomed to instant gratification struggle with delayed rewards. So if you bring up your child and you want to take care of them and let's use the word spoil, or you really want to just provide everything that they need because you're a loving parent, you may make them feel like they're owed to be receiving things automatically. And then when life gets tough, they get unhappy rather than work through the challenges and feel happy about achieving success
mm-hmm.
or overcoming the challenge.
Yeah.
So that's one. How about downfalls of prosperity? Lack of competitive success. Team sports teach discipline and resilience. Maybe children and youth and even adults should take place in team sports. Avoiding competition can leave individuals unprepared for real-world challenges. Idle time and overthinking. Excess leisure fosters dissatisfaction and trivial complaints. That's almost like Trivial Pursuit. Trivial complaints.
Mm.
Should be a game. Media reinforces exaggerated societal problems. That media wants to get viewership, so they exaggerate things in order for people to view the media. And it's like this, again, it's a cycle of the more outrageous we are, the more stressful we make you. You got to watch our show. The more you have anxiety and unhappiness, and it's a created, much of it is a created mess.
Yeah.
And it's fake. It's, as some great motivational speaker said, it's false evidence appearing real. It's not real, but it appears real. So now we have fear. We have anxiety.
Mm.
It's something we don't really need to worry about. Most of the things we really don't need to worry about, but we're being focused in on it, especially like in these election cycles, right?
Political stuff.
Yeah. When we have too much time on our hands and we have too many ways of posting our own opinions, we get people who are really upset at each other, anxious, and
you cannot make any changes in their life. So it's something that you know provide benefit to the society. It's something like that you're wasting your time to show your opinion. But that is not changing nothing.
It doesn't. Do you remember last show we talked about that 60% of children were spending 3+ hours a day on social media? And 68% of those who were spending 3+ hours a day on social media were feeling anxious, depressed, unhappy, anxiety. So right there, that was one of the things that it backs up this, is that if you have 3 hours a day to spend on social media, you have too much time on your hands. And you're being influenced by stuff that you really can't change. Part of it could be trolls. Some of it can be misinformation. Some of it can be news media that's just trying to get you to keep paying attention. Some of it's people who post stuff So you watch them, but the more controversial they can be, the more you watch. So it's these things that we see is unhappiness is the more people spend time on social media, the more unhappy they are. That's a general study that has been done and repeated and shown to be true.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, I know there are exceptions that some people spend time on social media and they're really happy people. But if you look at a large group, it tends to go the other way. The people who spend more time tend to be more unhappy. Conclusion.
Because the people be fired at their job.
They spend 40% of their time on social media. Yeah. So happiness and sadness are actually complementary forces. They're essential for growth and balance. Modern challenges, overprotection and comfort can reduce resilience. So how do we have a pathway to emotional well-being? Embrace challenges, build resilience. Adopt growth-oriented, proactive mindsets. Balance emotional experiences for a fulfilling life.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Today we're talking about removing a nail from your foot after walking a mile in a shoe. When you pull that nail out, the amount of relief you feel is the amount of happiness. So it's the pain that is taken away is the happiness. And if you don't have that pain and you just have a foot that was never stepping on a nail, you don't recognize the happiness of just a steady state of being able to exist in life with fellow humans.
So when the people is sick and also don't never be sick and not value their healthy life.
The statement is adversity. Is it the key to happiness? Statement or question mark? It's both. Overcoming challenges and happiness. Enhanced appreciation when you overcome challenges. Individuals who face adversity appreciate positive experiences more, increasing life satisfaction. Resilience development. Coping with challenges builds resilience, helping individuals maintain well-being in tough times. Meaning and purpose. Hardships lead to personal growth and a stronger sense of life meaning, both associated with enduring happiness. So happiness is facing challenges, working your way through them, overcoming them, hopefully with other people, like-minded individuals who you're working with, and you build closer relationships and you feel the accomplishment and you are able to recognize the happiness in your life. Examples of growth from adversity. Personal growth. People overcoming illness or loss develop deeper appreciation for life. That's pretty amazing, huh? Mm-hmm. Why adversity is key to happiness? So now we're making a statement. Why is it? Happiness is deeply influenced by life's challenges. Adversity provides contrast, fosters growth, and strengthens emotional resilience. Without adversity, happiness can become elusive because we don't recognize it. Example, a person recovering from a serious illness often appreciates good health more than someone who has always been healthy.
The same way I say.
The person who walks again appreciates being able to walk much more than the person who's always been able to walk.
Yeah.
So happiness often arises from overcoming life's challenges. Adversity builds resilience and enhances emotional depth. A runner finishing a marathon feels a deeper sense of accomplishment than someone who walked the same distance casually over several days. I think so. Lack of contrast. Here we go. So, going to the hedonic treadmill. This is contrast. The contrast principle is relief from discomfort heightens happiness. Hedonic adaptation. Positive experiences lose impact without adversity. Example, the child who always receives new toys quickly loses interest in them, while another child values a single gift received after waiting. So the point of that, again, is relief from discomfort. When you have that relief from discomfort and you experience the comfort, you appreciate it much more than someone who's been living in that comfort and grows bored with it or doesn't actually recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
So we should be recognizing our comfort. Illustration of the hedonic model. Lem,
his model of happiness is explained as the removal of pain. Happiness is heightened by the contrast of discomfort and relief. A hiker removing heavy, wet boots after a long trek feels intense relief, and that was demonstrating the Hedon model. So again, the relief of the challenge, the relief of the adversity. Absence of psychological growth. Adversity fosters resilience, self-efficacy, and personal development. Challenges help individuals develop deeper emotional capacities. For example, a student struggling to master a difficult concept feels a sense of pride and confidence when they finally succeed. Schools that have now put all students in classes where they can get B's and A's, and they just put the level different, and they don't have to struggle, or the struggle they have is softened because now the class is easier. And they're like, oh, we'll just put you in honors. We'll put you in AP. We'll put you in general path. And they have like, what was that, like five paths?
Yeah.
And it's all different levels. And it's so everyone gets through. Well, when you don't struggle, like if you struggle really hard and get through something, you feel a lot better about yourself.
Yeah.
And they're trying to avoid, a lot of what we try to do nowadays is have people avoid a failure, avoid not being able to accomplish something. But when we do that, we take away the joy of accomplishing something that you thought was really difficult. There's a lot of joy in accomplishing that. Yeah. How about this one? Psychological growth and positive psychology. Overcoming obstacles enhances long-term happiness and personal growth. Happiness from overcoming difficulty is more enduring than simple pleasure. A person who lost their job may learn new skills, start a business, and may feel a deeper sense of self-efficacy having gone through the loss and becoming more self-resilient.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So you remember when you went out on your own and you started your company a few years back?
Yeah.
You know, that took a lot of effort.
Yeah.
I hope you feel accomplished.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You look awesome. Back and go, this was awesome.
And I did twice, by the way. Yeah. So I started in Venezuela, and I accomplished, and I started again here. So,
yeah. You've gone a path that not many go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're okay. I won't say you're okay on your own, but you took a path on your own to try to make it and try to figure out how you could do it.
Yeah.
And you did. And did again. Yeah. Hey, you no more. No
again.
More. No. No. Not again.
Again. Why not?
Neurological desensitization. Peaks and valleys. Adversity regulates dopamine, heightens sensitivity to joy. In fact, if you don't have a peak and valley, you're going to just start dumping. You're going to start, no, sorry, this again. You're not going to start allowing dopamine to be released without the peak and valley. Emotional flattening. Lack of challenges desensitizes the brain to positive stimuli. A child who eats candy every day finds it less enjoyable than another who gets it only on special occasions. So you can't just live in a dopamine dumping brain. You need to have the move away, move back towards, move away, move back towards. You can't always have dopamine dumped because then there's just no more to dump and you don't experience it anymore.
Yeah.
So that's why, what is it called? Distance makes the heart grow fonder sometimes. Absence. Absence makes the heart grow fonder sometimes.
Yeah.
That then the dopamine's released again, and then you go away and you feel a little sad, and you get back and you're happy again.
That's the reason they travel a lot.
Yeah. Is that why? For us or for someone else?
For everybody.
For everybody. Make everyone happy. What else do we have here? We just talked about this, emotional flattening. Without emotional highs and lows, joy becomes muted. Sheltered lives may lack the intensity of emotional experiences. Someone living in constant luxury might feel bored or unfulfilled and start complaining.
Mm-hmm.
While someone who has worked hard for a small comfort feels satisfaction in that small comfort. I think that is absolutely true.
Yes, I agree.
How about fragility and fear of loss? Inability to cope. Minor disruptions feel overwhelming to those unaccustomed to hardships.
When we raise our children and don't allow them to have hardships, they don't know how to handle them, and they may feel overwhelmed as adults. They may say they're unhappy because they haven't experienced the challenges that they've overcome in their youth. Fear of loss. Comfort creates anxiety about potential instability. A person who has never faced criticism might feel devastated by a minor negative feedback at work. Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that happening. Social and relational aspects. Adversity enhances empathy and deepens social bonds. Shared struggles strengthen relationships and build trust. Friends who support each other during difficult times, like illness or loss, often develop stronger and deeper connections, enhancing their happiness.
Yeah.
So you can help somebody else in happiness by helping them through adversity. Is that true? I think it's true. How about isolation without shared struggles? Lack of adversity can lead to isolation and empathy gaps. You no longer have empathy. Shared experiences of struggle create opportunities for meaningful relationships. A wealthy individual who never experiences shared struggles may struggle to relate to friends who face everyday challenges. That's interesting. That if we don't have the ability to have empathy for others, we may not have that connection and may not have that happiness with that person or with others.
Or yourself.
Or with yourself. Philosophical insights. The eudaimonia versus hedonism. Fulfillment stems from overcoming challenges. That's eudaimonia. Temporary enjoyment lacks the depth provided by purpose-driven challenges. Example, we just talked about this. A volunteer who is helping rebuild homes after a disaster feels fulfillment compared to a vacationer who is seeking pleasure. So you may have a little bit of pleasure on vacation, but if you just help someone rebuild their house who had it destroyed during a hurricane, maybe you also feel accomplishment and feel happiness and that ability to help somebody. And it's a different feeling. And that's where the two different types of happiness come from. Evolutionary perspective on happiness. Survival reward system. Adversity fosters problem solving and emotional fulfillment. It actually helps feed our evolutionary psychology. Humans evolved to derive satisfaction from overcoming challenges. Early humans who faced food scarcity likely experienced greater satisfaction securing resources than those with abundance. A society facing challenges in finding food, finding gasoline, but who work together with each other and connected can actually be happy in the face of adversity.
I can tell you one example. So in Venezuela, we don't have gasoline sometimes, and we make a line, and people bring, my mama does, bring the domino, bring some sandwich, bring some beer because it's so hot, and you meet the person in the front of the line, the other line, so become like the social party wedding. 7-8 hours to have gas.
You're doing it together. You're part of the group.
Yeah, because you need to stay 8 hours in one line to put gas.
So that and it's either.
And you have to enjoy because you don't have to wait. How you be angry? It's more suffering.
And if you didn't have to, and you're just staying at home and you didn't interact with people, you would avoid the opportunity to have happiness.
Yeah.
Conclusion. Adversity creates contrast, builds resilience, and fosters deeper joy. Without hardship, happiness can become shallow or fragile. A musician who struggled to master an instrument enjoys their performances more deeply than someone who picked it up effortlessly. That may be true. That may be very true. Finally, this is a call for reflection. Reflect on how challenges have shaped your happiness. Seek meaning and growth in difficult experiences. Reflect on surviving a challenge or a challenging breakup and how that can lead to greater self-awareness and clarity about your future relationships. The picture here, the boots on the top of the hill after a long hike. When you walk to the top of a mountain yourself. Climb that mountain yourself. Face the weather, face the hill, face the challenges, and come to the top. The view from the hill looks much more beautiful than if a helicopter dropped you off.
Yes.
Have yourself a great week. Enjoy and embrace your adversity, and be happy. Thank you.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.